Have you ever felt so overwhelmed with the stress and pressure of the complicated business details surrounding the planning for a loved one to enter long-term care? Have you ever felt the pressure of being unprepared and faced with the final planning and arrangements for funeral or memorial services of a loved one? Have you ever been so overwhelmed by the details surrounding estate planning and estate settlements and so forth? If so, stay tuned to learn how you can be best prepared and have a plan when we find ourselves faced with the pressures of personal end-of-life challenges.
Welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. We take life's most difficult questions, concerns, and challenges and turn them into manageable nuggets of information so that you can make the best decisions when you are planning for tomorrow. You can contact us at pftradio@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook, Planning for Tomorrow Radio, or if you're calling from the local listening area, 304-399-8255, or long distance, 877-420-8255.
Here we are, and this is our bi-weekly program on Planning for Tomorrow. Of course, I'm Jean Dean, and Fred Kitchen from Henson Mortuary is here in the studio. We're going to do this program together, and Fred, it's good to see you back in town.
Hey, it's good to be back, Jean.
Yeah.
How are you?
Well, we got a lot of information for you, and as you heard the numbers given out, Fred will answer any questions that you bring to his attention if you give us a call at 304-399-8255. 1-877-420-8255. And we've got some really, well, at least one very unusual thing that we're going to share with you during the course of the program, because one of our faithful listeners, and I don't think he'll mind if I tell you his name, he's very well known here in town, and we'll tell you who it is later on, but he sent me a copy of a will that was filed in Cabell County back in 1820. Can you believe that, Fred?
This is one amazing document to look over, Jean.
It is absolutely fascinating. And listeners, I know you will be amazed. I mean, that was in the time of slave ownership, of course. Mm-hmm. And, wow, there's a whole interesting list of the values of things. So we're going to do that a little bit later on. But just the other day, Fred, you came up with some statistics that,
yes,
I think are really important to what we're going to talk about.
Well, you know, we've talked about wills in the past, and we've kind of did some high-level kind of dives into wills and having wills and living wills and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, here's some information that I stumbled across. It says 55% of American adults do not have a will in place at all.
That is such a big percentage, relatively speaking. 55%.
Right. So that, you know, we're basically talking there that those families are going to, that person, that 55% of people we're talking about is going to die intestate.
Unless
they do something about that. And, you know, it's something I speak to people all the time, and they'll say, you know I need to do that. I know I need to get that will in place. And it really is so important, and that's some of the things we're going to talk about again today and dig a little deeper into some of these, the subject matter around a will. But
and, you know,
important.
Also, Fred, that somebody may have made a will a long time ago, mm-hmm, and they've almost forgotten what they put in it, and they may want to change it. So
right,
you need to be sure that your wishes are up to date.
It's always good to revisit those. I mean, I wish Steve Sluss was here where we could talk to him about that a little bit. But probably every few years, you know, probably maybe every 5 years or so, we probably ought to be at least looking at it and saying, hey, has anything changed in my life?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we could be leaving things to people that has passed on, that's mm-hmm, no longer
mm-hmm,
around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could be leaving things to maybe church groups or something like that may not even be in existence. I mean,
it's good to
look at that and revisit.
Yeah, and it doesn't cost an arm and a leg to go to an attorney and get this done. And it's well worth the amount of money that it costs. But like
absolutely
I say, it's not too expensive.
Yeah, you know, here's another statistic. We're talking about age and cost. It says the people who choose to make wills are generally older. In the 1990s, over 90% of probated wills were made by someone who was 60 years of age or older.
Mm.
Now, that kind of makes, I guess it kind of makes sense because we're starting to think about really some planning. We're looking at retirement, type of things. But, you know, you can never plan too soon.
No, and it always bothers me when I see in the obituaries somebody maybe in their 30s or younger or 40s, It's so sad when a young person dies.
Absolutely.
And you can pretty much bet that that person has not made a will.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, in a lot of cases, you know, it's sad, but in a lot of cases, there's been no planning at all involved. You know, when you're younger, I mean, I'm 43, and, you know, even a lot of my, I've got some friends that haven't even thought of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm kind of urging them along, you know, saying, hey, come on. but you know, I mean, if some reason that they would pass away, you know, they've got kids, they've got a wife, they've got assets. It could be an absolute mess.
There are so many things that you really need to make your wishes known about. And with Steve, we've had him in here a couple mm-hmm. of times. And, you know, we all know we need to have a regular will, but there are other kinds of wills. And maybe he'll come back sometime and sort of help us a little bit on the other kinds, like the medical power of attorney, the living will, and all that kind of thing.
Well, you know, Steve has that document, and I'll mention this here real quick. Steve has the document, the three legal papers that you shouldn't live without.
Okay.
And I think we talked about that in a previous show, but we'll just kind of highlight here a little bit. You know, one of those three documents that we shouldn't live without is a durable power of attorney for health care.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, and that's basically the that lets you name those who will make the medical decisions on your behalf.
Mm-hmm. That's really important. And you know something? Just very recently, I redid my will. It had been 5 years since I'd looked at it, and I redid that. And the attorney said, now, this medical power of attorney, you ought to give a copy of this to your primary care provider. So, you know, I hadn't thought about, well, maybe the doctor actually needs a copy of this.
Exactly. Well, then, you know, one of the other things that Steve talked about was the durable power of attorney for finances. Who's going to handle my money decisions if for some reason I can't make those decisions any longer?
Right.
And then the other was the living will, which, you know, what kind of care do you want in the event that you become incapacitated and you can't make medical decisions? So those are things. And, you know, while we're talking about this right here, the three legal papers that we shouldn't live without, I want to go ahead and mention that, you know, on our new website that we have, which is pftradio.com. If you'll go there, there is a lot of helpful information on that site. One of the links or one of the places that you can go on the site is our free downloadable resources. And in those resources, we're putting a lot of these documents that we talk about on the air on the website, and they're PDF files. You can just double click and it's going to open up on your computer and you can print that out there at home.
That would be very helpful.
It would be. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the things that we talk about are on the website.
Yeah.
So the three legal papers you shouldn't live without, it's right there on the website. They can go and get that.
And, you know, Fred, if like me, you sometimes have difficulty with acronyms, just think that I can't even think of it now.
PFT
stands for Planning for Tomorrow.
There you go. Yeah. We tried to make it short because Planning for Tomorrow, by the time you would type that in,
it's pretty long.
Yeah, you would go, okay, you know, I'm not going to be able to get it. I'm going to make a mistake. But pftradio.com will get you to the site, and that will, like I said, there is a ton of resources, and we're adding resources to that site daily. And it's all free resources, a place. And we'll probably have we'll have some documents that we're going to talk about today.
Okay. Now, you drew my attention to the fact that the Wall Street Journal just last Saturday had this article in there that was entitled The 25 Documents You Need Before You Die.
Right.
And, I mean, it just tied into what we are talking about.
It was a perfect tie into what we were talking about. And, you know, I think in the past we had talked about the I have a document that we have at the funeral home that's available, and it's 125 tasks that must be done on the most difficult day of your life.
Mm-hmm. And it's very comprehensive.
It covers a lot of information, and it's all accurate information. It's all information that is all part of what you're going to need. But what Wall Street Journal has done here, they've taken 25 documents that are just 25 things that we're going to have, and they've really kind of narrowed it down and makes it a lot simpler. And, you know, for someone that is just trying to get started and they're saying, okay, I want to put something together here for my family to make this easier when something happens to me, 125 things I need to think about seems a little overwhelming, but 25 is manageable.
Yeah, 125, you know, oh boy. But nevertheless, they're not all things that have to be done right the instant.
No, they're not.
But they are important things.
But these 25 documents are things that we need before we die. These are things that we need to put in place for our family members before we die.
Yeah, before is very, very important, absolutely.
So
You want to take a commercial break here?
That would be great.
Okay. Ernie, are you with us here? Let's take a little break while we get our 25 documents that we need before we die, and we'll tell you what those are. 25 you can sort of manage.
That's right.
125 is a little daunting, although it's very, very important.
Absolutely. So I think these two documents will go hand in hand together.
Yeah, okay.
We'll talk about that when we come back from our break.
Okay. Of Planning for Tomorrow, and here in the studio, Fred Kitchen and Gene Dean, and right now we are looking at an article that appeared in last Saturday's Wall Street Journal, and it's entitled The 25 Documents You Need Before You Die, and it is really very, very comprehensive, isn't it, Fred?
It is. It is. I mean, it really goes into a lot of, it takes a lot of detail and manages it down to, like you said, 25 documents there, and I think, as you and I were discussing before we went on the air, this is something that I really believe that our readers or our listeners would really receive a lot of value from.
Yeah,
I think we ought to kind of dig into that.
Well, let's get into this, but they can also download the full article. And what I like so much, Fred, is that the cover, as it were, shows a picture of a file drawer, and then it's got six different file titles here, like the essentials, proof of ownership, bank accounts, etc. It gives you a good idea of how to put your material together.
It does. Well, you know, that's one of the things that you talk to people, and they say, you know, I don't even know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I have to get an attorney involved to just start at least getting these documents together? No.
Yeah.
A lot of times you don't. You need to at least be having your documents in some type of a manageable order.
Right.
And
right.
But they don't know how to get started.
Yeah.
You know.
This is kind of
an excellent guideline.
Yeah.
And
some of these we've talked about, like the essentials.
Yeah, there's things that you would need to have in these files would be like a marriage, your marriage license.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean that's going to be
gotta
documents.
Got to prove it, right?
Yeah, you got to prove it. That's
mm-hmm.
right. And we're not talking just about necessarily a lot of these things aren't all for documents for a funeral planning or anything
mm-mm.
like that. It has nothing to do with that, and you know some may have a little bit to do with it, but for the most part, this is talking about managing your assets after you're gone,
mm-hmm.
Helping family members know exactly what all you did acquire in life. A lot
right.
of times, there's things. We're in a society today where we do online investing today.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, things like passwords that our spouse mm-hmm. may not even know. You know, we mm-hmm. go on and we invest a certain amount of money into some type of an investment online.
Mm-hmm.
And, we need to make sure that those type of things
just keep those in a safe place. And,
exactly.
And you mentioned marriage license. Well, right underneath that, it says divorce papers.
Divorce papers.
That can be essential.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Personal and family medical history. It's one of the things they're talking about there also.
I wonder what exactly they mean by that. We need to maybe it goes into some detail.
Yeah, we'll dig into that
a
little bit and talk about that.
It's not the personal so much as the family medical history. Now, that might be a little bit difficult
right.
to track down.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I think family medical history, that would definitely be something that would be good to pass on. Let's say, let's say that someone has been adopted. It would be really nice. That would be good information to have if they decide, especially a female would decide to have children later on in life.
That's right.
If they had some type of a document in file that would talk about medical history.
Yeah,
sometimes that would be difficult to get a hold of. But in some instances, I think it's very possible that they could have that. So I think that would be very important information.
It really, that type of information is so important. In fact, somebody in my family has just realized and just found out that she has a genetic disease, and it's being passed on to her daughter already.
Right.
And so, you know, you need to know those things.
Sure, sure. And those are things that, you know, a lot of times that you don't maybe want to discuss publicly, but you
sure.
can put that in a document there that's passed on to your family so that they
mm-hmm.
at least know.
Yeah, that's
things.
Right. And you only just need really to tell maybe one person that you really trust in
Absolutely.
Your family where this information can be found.
Right, right. You know, one of the other things that we talk about is the durable health care and power of attorney. We've been talking about that
yeah,
a little bit,
yeah.
but then, you know, they're
mm-hmm.
touching on it. They're saying, hey, this is definitely something that we need to have in our file drawer. We'll just kind of cover these topics here, and then we'll dig a little deeper into the article. But,
yeah.
you know, authorization to release health care information.
Yeah, you would think that, well, the doctor knows all about this, but he's got to have the authorization in order to
Absolutely.
Let you have it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The living will. There we go again.
Yeah, another one. And the do not resuscitate order.
There's a very important one right
there.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. If you don't want to be kept alive on machines for a long, long time, mm-hmm. you need to make that plain.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and think about that. If you don't have some of those things in order, like the do not resuscitate order, it really can put your family in a difficult position.
Yes, because then they have to make a decision.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, what did mom want? What did dad want, you know?
Exactly.
So I think that's very good information. And, you know, again, this is a lot of information that people don't want to talk about a lot of times or don't want to think about.
Yeah, why do you find that is, Fred? Is it because it's like superstition? If we talk about this, then it's going to happen? Or what do you think? Why are we reluctant to talk about it?
You know, I think it definitely brings to front of mind the inevitable. You know, we all know that God has a plan that has been put in place that's bigger than all of us, and that one day we are going to die. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just how it works.
And we don't look forward to it.
We don't look forward to it, and we don't want to talk about it because we think, hey, we're never going to die, you know. And, you know, wouldn't that be awesome if we could think that way and we could make it happen? But but I think that's part of it, you know, and... It's just those things that it's uncomfortable even talking to a family member about. I've had family members tell me, they say, hey, I need to talk to my mother about this. I really don't know how to even go about, how do you initiate conversation about it? You know, do you say, let's go have lunch? And, oh, by the way, you know.
Mother's 80 years old. And, mother, let's talk about when you're going to not be here anymore.
Absolutely. You know, so that it's difficult. So, you know, I think things like these documents that we're making available and that Wall Street Journal is making available is something that you can actually say, hey, why don't you take a look at this? Why don't you read this? Let me know your thoughts about it, Mom, Dad.
That's a good way to start.
Yeah, you know, and it gets them at least thinking, and you know, is these things that maybe I can help you with or that we can work together on?
Yeah, yeah, and it even gets into the more financial things like who owns the property and where are the deeds to the property and even
mortgage accounts.
Yeah, even your vehicles. I would say this to women: are you sure that car that you drive is titled in your name? Or did your husband buy it and put it in his name?
Exactly, exactly. And a lot of people probably don't even know that information. That's listening right now are going, oh, my goodness, I don't know. I'm going to have to go and look. You know, but you're right. I mean, there's a lot of things that, especially when we have a spouse that maybe takes care of a lot of the things for
us. Yeah. Usually in a marriage, there's one, either the husband or the wife, who takes care of the big deals,
exactly.
You know, like this, and the other one needs to know about it.
Absolutely. Some proof of loans made and debts owed.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that'd be good information for a family to have.
It really would. I read a book just recently. In fact, I did an interview on the air with this woman who lives in Washington, D.C., and the book was called The Innocent Spouse. And she was very innocent until the husband died, and she found out that he owed $3 million.
Wow. It changes things, doesn't it?
Yeah. But, you know,
it definitely changed the way you felt about your spouse, too, can't it?
Absolutely. And another thing that they mention in this Wall Street Journal article, tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I need last year's tax returns? Well, you're going to have to file one next year. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it does help them. You know, if you have these tax returns in place, say 3 years, I think is what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. If you have these tax returns in place and you give this all this information to your attorney, it's going to help them to be able to look and see investments and things that may have been there that the family may not even knew of, retirement accounts, rollovers, things like that. And they'll be able to look at last year's tax return or maybe the year before's tax return and go, oh, okay, here's some things we need to be looking for. Did your dad have these documents in this file? Well, no, I don't see those anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, maybe we need to be hunting those down or see if he cashed them in. What did happen to him? Because we definitely don't want to leave anything out there that the family's entitled to.
Exactly. You know. Now, you just mentioned their IRAs.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were on the commercial break there, you also mentioned about insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you pointed out to me, you need to know about those because the insurance company or the IRA, they probably wouldn't even know about the death. So
the insurance company feels like that it's not their responsibility to notify you that you have this insurance on your loved one.
Right.
You know, it's your responsibility to have these documents. You receive the policy, you're to keep that. And in a safe place and to know it's in existence. And, you know, one of the things that in this article it talks about says insurers are saying that they're behaving lawfully is what they're saying.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. Says under policy contracts, they are not required to take steps to determine if the policyholder is still alive or not. So
they could get away with not paying out a whole lot of money.
Exactly. So, you know, unless a beneficiary comes forward and says, hey, you know, our loved one has passed away, here's the documentation to prove mm-hmm. what we're saying, then they might not even know that there was an insurance policy there.
Right. And I think it's really good if a husband and wife can talk about, you know, well, I have so much of an insurance policy on my life, and you're
Absolutely.
The beneficiary. It
Absolutely.
Would help if people talked about that.
That's one of the communication is key. That's one of the things that is so important in all this is communicating, like you said a minute ago, with someone you trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be
mm-hmm.
somebody you trust.
Yeah.
And because otherwise you're not going to open up and talk about these things.
And we've been talking, too, about lawyers, attorneys, and somebody might say, I don't have an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look in the yellow pages.
They're everywhere.
You'll find a lot of them.
We don't have a shortage of attorneys,
no,
that's for sure.
We don't. And if you recognize a name, well, go see that person.
Exactly.
And if you don't, well, take a pen and go through.
Absolutely. You know, there's a lot of attorneys that will at least give you a free consultation. You know, they'll sit and talk to you.
That's right.
And go and see if you're comfortable with them. You know, I mean, that's the case a lot of times is we've got to be comfortable mm-hmm. with who we're doing business with.
Yeah.
And go and at least make that phone call, sit down with them and say, hey, I'm just inquiring and here's some questions that I've got. And just see if you kind of gel with this person and feel
That's
comfortable.
Right.
And then if you do, go ahead and use them for what you need. But
And don't be afraid to ask them how much they're going to charge for doing a will.
Absolutely.
Like I say, it's not a huge amount, but
you
ask what it is up at the beginning.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right at the beginning. So, and when you look in the yellow pages, if that's where you go, you will see that most attorneys list what their specialties are. And if they specialize in wills, then it will say that.
Right.
So.
Well, one of the things in this article we'll get back to here in just a little bit.
Oh, we're going to have to, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we'll get back to is talking about the financial consequences of not having all this stuff.
Not having
work.
It. Right. Okay.
Exactly.
Stay with us, listeners, while we take a news break here. And then when we come back and during the second half of the show, we will share with you this will that dates back to 1820. It's really surprising. So stay with us. This is Planning for Tomorrow, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Planning for Tomorrow with your hosts, Fred Kitchen, and I'm Jean Dean, and we're going to continue talking, Fred, about that article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal just last Saturday entitled, The 25 Documents That You Need Before You Die. I'm so pleased that you sent this to me because I had not seen the Wall Street Journal for Saturday, and it is so helpful. And first of all, let's tell people how they can find the same article that we're talking about.
Well, this article is on the Wall Street Journal. The online version,
okay.
But it's also available. We've created a link, and we're going to put this information also on our website, the pftradio.com, www.pftradio.com. All the information will be right there, at least a link or information that you can get to that, and we'll have that up probably by end of day today.
Okay, that's good. That's
so
good.
They'll have access to that. You know, one of the things we were talking about before we took a break was the financial consequences of we were talking about the insurance and
mm-hmm.
some of the insurance policies that have never been...
Right, insurance and IRAs.
Exactly,
yeah.
Things that family members don't know about
mm-hmm.
and the insurance company is not going to tell you about because they don't really have an obligation to do so.
Well, they probably don't even know that the person's died unless somebody sends them the death certificate.
They have no idea. You know, they have no idea to know. So, but here's some information that I thought was really interesting. It says, according to the National Association of Unclaimed Property Administrators, state treasurers are currently holding $32.9 billion in unclaimed bank accounts, insurances, and other assets.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, just things that people obviously don't know is there.
Yeah.
Or did not have. You know, that's why this is so important to have these 25 documents in place in one specific location that a family can find it because,
mm-hmm.
you know, you may have an insurance policy and your kids may not even know you had it.
Exactly. And if all else fails, I mean, put all of this together in a box, preferably in a file cabinet that's fireproof just in case.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's several places that you can definitely put it. But, you know, they talk, we'll just kind of highlight highlight quickly here.
Okay.
They talk about the essentials, the things that are essential, and we've talked about this quite a bit, which is the will, and that's the most important document that we need
right,
to keep on file.
Right, that's first and foremost.
That's first and foremost. And we all need to know that wills are subject to probate.
And I never quite understood that, even though I've done it. But I mean, you go to the courthouse and do something or other.
Yeah. We'll have to have Steve back and clarify again for us. You know. That's the thing. I mean, you know, when you really dig into a lot of the information that we've been digging into the last several shows, I mean, it's you kind of have to revisit it because it's not information that's easily to decipher and understand.
Not something you think about every day.
It isn't.
As you say, though, the main will is the most important thing.
Right. Here's something that I thought was really good, and this is nothing that is it's a supplement to a will, but it's basically a letter of instruction, which I think is great. Basically, a letter of instruction would be something that would be able to tell your children or your executor, executrix, you know, how you mm-hmm. wanted things done. Your will's going to kind of do that, but this letter of instruction may give some other insightful detail that, you know, the will's going to be somewhat high level sometimes.
Right.
But this here's going to really kind of dig into it a little deeper as to what you really want.
So would that be the sort of document where you would say if I want Mary to have this particular piece of jewelry or something like that?
Well, that would definitely be in the will, I would think.
You'd put that specifically in the will?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, here's what we're talking about there is your executor would have names and contact information of your attorneys. Who do we need to contact?
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's this letter of instruction. In the event of my death, call attorney so-and-so.
So-and-so, yeah, okay.
In the event of my death, call my broker,
right,
so-and-so.
Yeah.
You know.
This is my insurance agent, yeah,
exactly.
I understand.
Those type of contacts, your financial advisors, your accountants, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we talk about is proof of ownership, how important that is. You should keep documentation of your housing, your land ownership, cemetery plots, vehicles, stock certificates.
I think the vehicles, because I went through this just recently, finding the title.
Right.
This may surprise you, but the title to my late husband's car had not been sent to him by the bank.
Oh, wow.
It was an out-of-state bank, but nevertheless, several years ago when he paid off the loan, they should have sent him the
title.
That's right.
And so you're wondering where he placed it, maybe, and then come to find out.
I looked all over for it. Well, we don't have it.
Yeah, and they had never sent it. And see, that's another good thing. I mean, like I said, this whole process is very complicated, but just something that simple right there that, you know, a car loan was paid off and the title was never released and sent to you
from
the bank.
If you want to sell that car or whatever you want to do with it, you've got to have that title. It
becomes a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. You know, if they were had a partnership or a corporate somehow in a business, were involved in a business, you know, those are documents that need to be all part of this. You know, families, it's pretty deep. You know?
Listeners, I hope your mind isn't getting boggled by all this, but it really is essential. I mean,
it is.
It's beginning to sound like more and more that you have to do, but you do have to do it. And it's things like this article and also what you give people from your mortuary, which is a much more in depth because it talks about 125 tasks that you need to do.
Right.
But is that on your website?
That is on the website. That is on pftradio.com. We have put that on there. It's the, I think it's called 125 tasks that
it must be done on the most difficult day of your life. Right.
And I believe it is one of the documents that's in on the free downloadable resources. Yeah,
okay.
It is there.
Okay. Yeah.
It is there. So that, 125 tasks that must be done on the most difficult day of your life is on the website.
Right.
And
they
can download that from the comfort of their own home and print it out if they'd like.
Absolutely.
So
we keep stressing the fact that the will, not just the medical power of attorney or the living will or all that, the will, of course, is the most important thing. But I think this would be a good time to share with
listeners
this will that a good listener sent to me. And I don't think he'll mind if I mention his name. And thank you, Bill Spurlock, for sending this to me. It's
this is
a will.
One fascinating document.
Yeah, it
really
dates back to 1820, and it was filed here in Cabell County, and it lists the price of the appraisement of the estate, and this is almost 200 years old, so $4,700 doesn't sound a lot today, but I bet that was a lot of money back in those days.
I bet that was a lot of money.
And it goes on to talk about who gets what, the different relatives and everything, and how it's filed. But the most fascinating thing to me is when they actually list what was included in his estate.
Their assets.
Now, assets,
that's
yeah.
what's interesting. You know, when we hear the word assets, we think yeah. of, you know, these stocks and these bonds and these cars
right.
and these homes and all
yeah.
that stuff. But uh-huh. when you look at a document this old,
uh-huh.
assets has had a whole different meaning, didn't
oh,
it?
Oh, they really did. and perhaps maybe a little bit shocking to us today,
shocking.
But
absolutely.
It wasn't back then. Remember, this was in the days of slavery, and it starts out in this list of assets by saying, Anthony, a black man at $600.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on and lists a black woman and even gets down to a black girl, a black boy, and the valuation for each of them. And what is really kind of, well, I suppose they were referring to living things, but in that same column under the list of the people and their value, the slaves, immediately under that it goes to 35 head of cattle and two horses.
Yeah.
And a horse apparently was worth $55 back
yeah,
in those 15, days.
15 head of sheep
yeah.
at $2 each.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Here's interesting. 25 and a half acres of standing corn in the field.
Yeah, 25 acres. That's
I mean,
a lot.
Like I said, this really opens up your mind as to
yeah.
what was considered, like you said, nearly 200 years ago, what was considered an asset to someone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were small things like... let's see, two old axes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When does an axe become old?
Maybe that's where the old adage, you know, he's an old axe or something.
But I just love this because it's mm-hmm. one tea kettle that's valued at $3.
Right.
And wheels, beds, a saddle blanket. Now, I can see where that would be very important in those days. A saddle blanket... it says single and bridal. That was valued at $20. And then it goes on to the things that I guess probably were in the house, even clothing and a great coat for $15, a pot oven and skillet. I mean, these are things that, you know, I don't even know what that is. Do you?
No.
But an iron wedge and a... an FRDE. I don't know what that would be, but these things are so interesting. And of course, this will, like today, it's on file at the Cabell County Courthouse.
Right.
And
public document.
Public document, right. And I think maybe it goes on for even more than the pages that we have here. And
I think this, you know, this really gives it gives me, and I think it's got to give our listeners some insight as to what, I mean, you know, 200 years ago, this was what was included in someone's estate and
exactly,
their assets.
Exactly, exactly.
It gives you an idea of today. Now let's move forward almost 200 years.
Yeah.
And what are we really saying in our will? I mean, is it mm-hmm. as in-depth as it needs to be? Are we including all of everything that we do own? And, you know, today it's mainly what we're looking at is going to be, when we consider assets for the most part, we're talking about homes, property,
mm-hmm.
real estate, cars, you know, like I said, stocks, bonds, things like
yeah.
that. But, I mean, this really breaks it down as to, you know, what do we own?
Yeah. That was very interesting that you said when I mentioned jewelry that mm-hmm. we probably should be including some of that in our will.
Right.
And we need to go ahead and take our break here.
Yeah.
Let's take a little commercial break here, and then we'll come back and we'll tell you more of what is in this will that was written in 1820. Welcome back to Planning for Tomorrow, and Fred Kitchen and I, we are looking at a copy of this will kindly sent to us by Bill Spurlock. This will was actually filed, I've been saying 1820, but it was 1819, but anyway, close to 200 years ago, and it lists all the animals. This must be a wealthy landowner,
mm-hmm.
going by the number of slaves that he had and the number of animals, 15 head of sheep. Well, now, sheep were pretty cheap, I guess. They were
yeah.
only $2 each.
Well, you know, we were talking about all these assets here and
yeah.
the detail involved, but here is a house Bible. I guess that would be like a family family Bible, maybe?
I would think so.
Got it listed?
It was valued at $7, which was more than a lot of the household things that you might find. But they really listed absolutely everything, didn't they?
They really did. They really did.
Yeah. I mean, there were things that you would know would be important because of a horse's use in that time, like the saddles and everything, mm-hmm. the saddles and that. But they went for even a bedstead and furniture going with that.
Right.
And it's all kind of a little bit mixed up here because right above that is four head of hogs. we've got hogs and sheep and
you know, some people may be listening to this saying, you know, really, what does it really matter, all these things? Why should I even list that? Why did they list it?
Yeah.
You know, but, I mean, when you acquire things in life and you want to make sure, especially where there's going to be estates, and let's face it, there's every family in the world, there, if you dig far enough back, there's somebody that's going to want something that they're probably not entitled to.
Oh, especially if it has any value.
Exactly, exactly. Or they're going to say, hey, that belonged to me. That was mine. I'll give that to my grandfather or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Mom promised me I could have that.
Right. So, you know, this here is really just spelling it out. This is saying, hey, here's what I want done with my assets, and here's what I have. Here's what I've got. It's
well, and
very interesting.
Knowing that we have to go back 200 years almost, mm-hmm. Things would have been done differently in those days.
Absolutely.
I mean, just imagine the changes that have taken place. But this is so totally interesting, and I do really appreciate receiving this. So let's see what else we can share with our listeners here. It does have, of course, all the legal things here, the administrator and all that kind of
everything
thing.
You'd normally have in a will today, typically,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I would imagine if one were so inclined that you could go to the courthouse and you'd be able to go back and pull up some of these things mm-hmm. like this. But as I said at the beginning, the thing that interests me most is the listing of the names, or at least just one name for each of the slaves that was owned here. And it's all the way from $600 down to, let's see, what was that little girl? $300. And then there's another one, a boy, $200.
And it gives you a real feel for, you know, this is Cabell County. This is
this is
not out of
it's
state.
Not in the deep south somewhere.
No, this is here in West Virginia in Cabell County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where we all reside. And, I mean, it really gives you a snapshot back.
Oh, it really does.
It really does.
And I do so much appreciate receiving that. Again,
mm-hmm.
Bill, thank you
excellent
so much
document.
For sending that
thank
to
you,
us.
Thank you, Bill.
And it, of course, ties right into what we've been talking about this morning. And back to that article that was in last Saturday's Wall Street mm-hmm. Journal. And as you said, you're going to put that on the...
That'll be on the website.
PFT radio website.
Yeah.
Got it right, didn't
you
I?
You did. You did good. You did really good.
PFTradio.com.
There will be a test on this, Gene.
Okay, I think I'll not be here that day, but no, it really is so helpful. Tell me something else that you found to be really of importance. They're all importance, but in the Wall Street Journal article, the 25 documents article, what else attracted your attention specifically, Fred?
Well, you know, we were talking about the tax returns a minute ago and wondering
oh, yes.
what the need was for that, and it is exactly what we were talking about. You know, you can look at last year's past returns, the past returns, and get a snapshot of what assets to be looking for.
Mm-hmm,
you know, accountant
mm-hmm.
can, or your attorney,
right.
To see if there's anything that is missing from there.
Yeah.
So that's a neat thing. Sharing a list of accounts and online login information. We talked about that a little bit.
Passwords, that's right. Mm-hmm. Safety deposit boxes.
Absolutely.
And where are the keys?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Going back to that one person or whoever that person is that we trust.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that information needs to be shared with someone.
Yeah. I saw a hilarious movie a few years ago, and I've been searching catalogs to try and get a copy of it because it was entitled Father's Dead and Who's Got the Will.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it was funny, but it was so true.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And nobody knows.
No.
Mm-mm. You know, here's another thing that we've talked about a little bit. Copies of life insurance policies are among those important documents. I mean, at least a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to keep your – and here's an idea. What if we had all these documents? We got these 25 documents. together, and then we made Xerox copies of them. We put them in a safety deposit box or wherever they need to be, but then we created this one binder, this one book. Mm-hmm. We'll call it the love book or whatever, you know, because that's the book that, you know, I'm doing this for my family, that they can go to and at least have copies of all those documents. They know where they're at. You've told them they're going to be in the safety deposit box. But in this one binder in my file cabinet in my office in this back section here, the family knows to go and get that binder, and they're going to have everything they need.
Right. You know that you'll need the originals of the different documents, but if you could have copies, it would really... In fact, didn't you tell me earlier about a man who did just that?
Yes, we had a fellow that came into the funeral home, made some funeral arrangements with us and pre-planning, and he had done just that. Excellent. It was just the best I'd ever seen. He had it all in a binder. Mm-hmm. He had it tabbed. The family could actually go to the section that said mortgages or go to home deeds, and there was copies of the deeds. He could go to the insurance file tab, and there was copies of all his insurance policies.
Oh, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, stocks, bonds, things like that. And they could go to that tab and just see a snapshot. There was his whole life of what he had acquired in that one book. And, I mean, it's just a great gift for a family member.
Oh, absolutely. It makes it so easy for everyone involved.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. But, you know, we talked about the marriage and divorce decree papers, things like that. You know, we definitely need to have those on file.
Well, we've got two callers here, and we've got 4 minutes before we go off the air. So let's go ahead and take whoever came in first here. Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, I got a quick question for you. These pre-need burial plans, are they ripped? Hey, are there?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah.
Okay, these pre-need burial plans, are they a CD that gathers interest?
Well, they can be a CD, yes.
Okay, and the interest goes to who?
Well, here's the way that works. Let's say that you do a pre-need burial plan at your funeral home of choice. And then, let's say it's for $5,000.
Okay.
And then it starts accruing interest. They have to guarantee that funeral home in the state of West Virginia, under the guidance of the Attorney General's office, has to guarantee that that funeral will never cost that family any more than that initial investment, okay?
Bingo. Then I got screwed out of $800.
You better get an attorney, Bob, see what you can do. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Bye. All right, let's go ahead and take a call from Phil. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. I'll talk fast. Hey, you said about putting these things, papers together as an archive. Something related as a gift to the family. I have been archiving every single one of my text messages. I have about 200 meg of text messages between my family members.
That's awesome.
I'm saving that. 20 or 30 years from now, or 100 years from now, I think that'd be a nice little, not a diary, but it's real easy to do.
Well, it is. Phil, I attended a funeral not long ago, and I heard a brother say, I wished I had all those text messages between me and my brother. I wish I could go back, those comments that we had every day. How are you doing that, Phil?
Well, you just back up the phone. Every time you back up your phone, it backs up onto your hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then for about $5, you can go out and get a program that goes and finds that secret backup file and turns it into a Word program.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
I'm absolutely amazed, Phil. If you had said you were keeping, like, personal emails or something, I wouldn't have been quite so surprised. But text messages, that does surprise me.
Well, like I said, I mean, I heard that at a funeral just recently. I heard a brother say, I wish that I could go back and access those text messages that me and my brother had between each other. Phil, that was great. Appreciate that.
Thanks for calling, Phil.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
Well,
good show.
We got our questions at the end of the show this
that's
morning.
That's right. That's right.
Both came in simultaneously.
Well, again, Gene, these documents, this the 25 documents that you'll need before you die, will be the link, and it will be placed on pftradio.com.
Okay. All right. And
so it'll be there.
If you happen to forget that, remember PDFs, PT.
PFTs.
You're
going to have to let me do that.
For tomorrow, yeah. And if all else fails, go to the website for Wall Street Journal.
That's right.
Last Saturday's edition, you'll find the 25 documents you need before you die. Fred, I do hope that this program is helping people. I think that
it
is.
I hope so, too. I mean, that's what we want to do. We want to be a resource for families.
Absolutely. Fred, it's been great to be with you again this morning.
Gene.
Listeners, have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.
This is your home for Tri-State Talk with Bobby Nelson. Super Talk, 94.1 FM and AM 930, WRVC, Huntington.